All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NFL podcast for Friday, January 4th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is.
Coughing James Davis. I was coughing. I muted myself so like a professional so you couldn't hear me, but I am coughing.
My buddy, you're nothing if not a consummate professional. We're
I'm choking on a banana.
It's playoff time, baby. Playoff time in the NFL where things start getting looking real weird for some of these lineups, especially when you get this wild card weekend going. We're going to break down the four-game slate between Saturday and Sunday. We'll try to break it down. We're going to go game by game, but we'll also try to go slate by slate in terms of, because the way DraftKings and FanDuel obviously separated stuff here is I think you're going to see, and I need to look actually, because I had this down and I don't remember what it is. Each site prioritized the slates a little bit differently in terms of overall contest size, and shoot, I don't remember which one it was, but we'll try to still go slate by slate and then also try to talk about the weekend as a whole and go game by game. So it's a little bit different than our typical game by game cover where we kind of just talk about the main slate of games. So if it sounds a little bit different or it sounds like we're saying this guy here and this guy there, we'll try to make the most sense of it. And as always, you can go over to the site, dfsr.com, and check out where we're landing on our optimal lineups, because that will just give the very clear picture of where lineups are headed. But, you know, what are your overall thoughts when we hit the playoff time here for DFS? Obviously, we're out of the time of just having, you know, teams like the 49ers and the Cardinals that you can, you know, play guys against, or the Bucks, and now you're into the teams that it's pretty tough to get to the playoffs without good defenses to start. Does it make things all still too close? Do you see overall, do you feel like this weekend offers some value? We'll get into some of the games, but what are your general thoughts on just playing DFS contests on these wildcard weekends?
Just to be totally real with you, I mostly looked at the Sunday slate because that was the slate I wrote up for us this week. And it sucks. It's awful. It's like really hard to find any value at all. You're getting like backup receivers. Our system is tearing its hair out, being like, I don't know, Mike Williams. Like somebody has to be in this wide receiver three slot on FanDuel, right? So it's this slate's brutal on Sunday. That's my general take. I don't know if you saw anything different on Saturday.
I think the
whole weekend slate probably looks a little bit cleaner, but yeah, it's a really rough situation.
Okay, yeah, so we'll start there. The whole weekend slate looks a lot clearer because the Saturday games are much more advantageous from a DFS perspective. And we'll get into these into the game by game. But a lot of the clear, to me, very clear cash game plays are on the Saturday slate. So I think that...
I noticed that when you were deciding who was going to write up which weekend, you said, hey, why don't we split it by Saturday and Sunday? I'll do Saturday.
Well, first of all,
like
I was,
you said, it was in the same
first
sentence, not even a comma. So.
First come, first serve, and that was luck. I hadn't really looked at where things had landed when I suggested that. Although I take that back because I did see the Colts and Houston. And so Houston is favored by one here against Indianapolis, 48 over under, which is easily the highest total of the weekend. The next closest is Dallas and Seattle at 43. So this is a full 5 points, you know, 5 points higher than the next closest game. And this is one of the reasons I was saying.
Listen to those totals, by the way. Like these totals are so low for this weekend. It's outrageous.
Yeah, so right, you're getting three teams with under 21 implied points, and then you obviously get this game, the Colts and the Texans, that 23.5 and 24.5 respectively. Now this game did open at Houston -3 and has gotten bet down to Houston -1. So that's a pretty significant amount of action on the Colts side coming in here. From a DFS perspective, I think people are going to trying to make a decision between Deshaun Watson and Andrew Luck in terms of which quarterback to play. You know, there's maybe a Lamar Jackson case in here, and we'll talk about some of the other guys. But in terms of big money, Watson, Luck, and Jackson are basically the three most expensive quarterbacks on the slate. I wrote up Watson, and I'm wondering if you feel like you'd end up agreeing with that. They were basically the same from a fantasy points perspective this season, with Watson getting a lot more of his on the ground. If you had to choose one or the other, we have Watson for almost three full points more than Luck. Does that strike you as correct looking at the way this thing is kind of shaking out?
Well, it's something I wrote up in Lamar Jackson's write-up for the Sunday slate, but one of the trump cards that these teams have with a quarterback who's excellent at running when it comes to the playoffs is just really unleashing that guy, right? I mean, any sane team is managing their quarterback carries throughout the season. There's just been too many cautionary tales of quarterbacks getting out there, one too many carries, gets, you know, concussed or a knee injury or whatever. But in the playoffs, they tend to throw that sort of caution to the wind. So I think it's reasonable to bump up Watson's carries a little bit. And I think if you do that, he becomes the highest floor option on the slate to me. Like right now, I guess it looks close in our system between him and Jackson. I would want to prioritize Watson, I think, just because he's also a real passer, you know, and Jackson just can't pass. He's like, he's just a running back who lines up at the quarterback position, and he like chips in a 100 passing yards here or there or whatever. But yeah, right now Watson is the top guy of that group for me.
I think, you know, on FanDuel, at least for the all weekend slate and really just the Saturday, Sunday as well, if you're going to play Watson, because I think you also need, so there's two guys I think you absolutely need to prioritize on the slate, and we'll get to the second one in Zeke in a minute when we talk about Seattle and Dallas. But I think you really need to prioritize Hopkins too. I think taking Hopkins and Zeke together, just these guys are so much better than anybody else on the entire slate. I mean, Hopkins is a top tier wide receiver one anyway, like on a full week of games. This week he's especially, he just looks like, especially like, you just need to take his targets, because they've shown that even though the, you know, even like last week against Jalen Ramsey, when the rest of the wide receiver core was basically decimated, Hopkins still saw like 16 targets.
And was just actually, like, we drew it up, dude. I'm going to pat ourselves on the back for that on the podcast, because that's literally exactly what we said would happen.
Yeah, and we said that
that the game was going to matter, and in a game that matters, they're going to give the ball to their best player. Of course they are.
Yep, and they did it, and he was excellent again. He's had some insane stats this season. He has 116, I think, catches in the season, zero drops. So any ball that has been catchable for him this season, he's caught.
That's truly crazy.
It's unbelievable. I just think you have to prioritize Hopkins here. And then what ends up happening is, when you prioritize Hopkins and Zeke, and by the way, I have the same kind of comments about Zeke when it comes to running back, you are going to need to just take a flyer somewhere else, especially if you're like, well, I want to take those two guys and Watson, right? So that, now you're starting to look at, you're in terms of DFS lineup for the whole weekend, you're starting to look at guys that are cheap and are kind of loserish, but it's worth it. And this is the point I want to say, because I know people are going to jump into chat and maybe some comments, that we're going to get some comments about this, is that, oh, can we really play like DeAndre Carter? Yeah, you can, if it gets you Hopkins. Like that's the trade-off you're getting.
I'm thrilled to play. I mean, you don't even want to see the guys we're talking about in the Sunday slate for the same reason. It's people like Taylor Gabriel and stuff like that. And I think Carter, actually, while we're on the subject of this game, I think there's room for upside here too. It just so happened that in that game against Jacksonville, that it was just really working with Hopkins. But if it was not going quite so well, I think Carter could have gotten even more targets. Like, I think the Texans were surprised by how well it was working throwing to DeAndre. And I think their philosophy seemed to be, we'll just throw to Hopkins until they figure it out. And since they never figured it out, they never stopped. But I think, yeah, prioritizing the guys with the known opportunity in reasonable matchups, because they're all bad matchups basically this weekend, is going to be where the good money is. And actually, I think Watson, I'm looking at his carries now, Doug. We had him at around 5.5 to 6 carries. It's been 13 and 8 in these must-win games in the last 2 weeks. And I think it's going to be more in that 8 range would be my guess. And I think that's going to get Hopkins into all the lineups here.
You saying my name in the podcast really threw me off. It's like when my wife says my name, it means I'm like in trouble about something. It's just like when it's some other, you know, when the word Doug comes out, I feel like there's like some kind of emergency or something like that. So you just said my name. I'm just telling you. Really kind of threw me off here.
I don't think I've ever heard you say James either, now that we're on the subject, unless you're talking to somebody else about me.
Exactly. So I'm just like, I was looking something else up, and I kind of looked up like I was in trouble or I did something wrong.
I didn't mean for it to be jarring for you, but
one piece of injury news that actually is going to matter is Kiki Kute is questionable right now. He sat out the last couple of weeks. If he were to play, now he has practiced in full, so if he played this week, this would adjust some of our targets around, and I'm actually a little bit annoyed because our back end,
if he plays, then you just play him. I mean, 5600 is too cheap for him on FanDuel. The big thing is they've just been holding him out for 4 weeks. He wasn't practicing at all, but if he comes back, I would suspect he's just fine.
Yeah, our back end ATL is not showing the snap counts from last week, which is annoying because I can't see who had more snaps, DeAndre Carter or Vincent Smith. So now if Kute plays, and it actually looks like he's going to, this will probably start adjusting some things around. You can only, on FanDuel, you can only play 4 Texans, and I think if you're going in order, you have to go probably Watson and Hopkins 1 and 1A, or probably Hopkins first, and then I would say Hopkins first, then Watson. And then what are your thoughts here on Lamar Miller? Because Lamar Miller, he is 4,900 on DraftKings, and let me just check real quick. He is 64 on FanDuel. He is a guy that they have wanted to kind of give, at times, running back one sort of opportunity to. He's actually had his best yards per carry since he was back with the Dolphins, when he was basically in a timeshare before he came over to the Texans. Does 6,400 strike you as another place to go at running back here. The Colts have been good against the run, but look, we're in a week where the Bears are playing on defense and the Baltimore Ravens are playing on defense. You're getting only marginal differences in terms of defenses. Give me some thoughts on Miller. We spent a lot of time here on the Texans.
Yeah, right on. I was also looking up that snap count for you. Smith did outsnap Carter, but they both played a ton of snaps. Carter, okay. 56 snaps, Smith, 65. So take that for what it's worth as we go forward here. Also, Vincent Smith. It's so jarring to read how his name is spelled. So that also distracted me. But we were talking about Lamar Miller. Yeah, I mean, it's just a short slate. Here's the thing about playing a slate like this. And this is like the type of slate where you really, really need a lineup optimizer. Like, I try not to be too salesy about this. I think generally speaking, people can kind of guess and check. And like, you can find mostly reasonable plays if, you know, you're on a 15 game Sunday main slate or whatever in the NFL. On these short slates, you're just going to mess up if you don't just press that optimizer calculate button somewhere. And that's kind of how I feel about, like, I couldn't sit here and credibly tell you the difference between playing like Lamar Miller or Marlon Mack this week. Mm-hmm. Both these guys like seem like kind of the same play, like fine plays in a fine matchup. And it's just a price thing for me. Miller being cheaper really matters. I suspect we'll wind up having more shares of him just because, again, being cheap also matters a lot more on a small slate than it does on a big one. I guess I feel fine about it. I don't really have a ton of big insights other than to say, just especially if you're talking about the whole weekend, just go look at any of the running back situations on Sunday and tell me what you think. Because I think when you get done, you'll be like, oh yeah, I'll play Lamar Miller.
Yeah, so. And by the way, if we spend more time in these two games, this is because we're trying to signal that these are the games to prioritize. Absolutely. And I'm with you that taking the $800 difference on FanDuel for Miller, we have him and Mac. Yeah, we have Mac projected for slightly more. That could really go either way in terms of just like one carry one way or the other is going to be a difference. And then Lamar Miller at sub 5,000 on DraftKings really helps there as well, because I think you're going to see they're going to, between Watson, Miller, and Hopkins, I think that's going to be the bulk. That's just going to be the bulk of their usage. One more thing you mentioned about having an optimizer is that on these short slates, and we've talked about this before, is that mistakes cascade way quicker than on the larger ones, right? Like the I would say the certain percentage of people that just don't play DeAndre Hopkins in this situation are already cascading all their problems all the way down, because you're taking worse payoffs in every other place.
Middle priced guys, and then
exactly.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Oh, sorry, I was just taking a sip of my coffee because I thought you were going to go longer. Okay, final thing here on the Colts. I do think you can pivot to T.Y. Hilton. I think you're going to see big. I think you could definitely at times see, or there's a lot of situations here that you can see a pretty healthy amount of targets. And then last thought here on the Colts. What are your thoughts on Eric Ebron? Because he was a guy that we were fine kind of playing at like mid 5,000s or higher on FanDuel when it was looking like he was just going to get insane amount of targets. And then those just really haven't been there over the last couple of weeks. Would he be a guy that you would want to prioritize in this spot at tight end? Tight end's very weak. Or is this maybe he's just a little too overpriced from a run of games earlier in the season that looked like he was going to be able to sustain like this Ertz and Kelce sort of level, and he just really didn't get there on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a weekend too where the haves and the have-nots at tight end are pretty staggering. A lot of terrible tight ends. I think if you're playing Ebron expecting like six targets out of him, that seems reasonable to me. We know they love him in the red zone regardless of what the target share looks like. If you look back to the early season, several games he would have a touchdown on four targets, five targets, seven targets, two touchdowns on three targets, you know. So even if he's only coming in for the red zone package, I think you could see him. I think another reason for optimism here for Ebron is that, and this is a case against Marlon Mack actually, is that this will be the first game where the Colts have really been challenged in a few weeks, and Ebron tends to be more involved in games where there is more of a challenge, right? I don't know if you wrote this up in the article or not, but these teams actually played each other in early December, and that was a game that was like Hilton's biggest game of the season. He had 12 targets for almost 200 yards. Ebron was solid in that game too, had eight targets with a touchdown. So I'm looking at the Colts here, and I would think I would prefer to play like Miller over Mack, but I think I like the Colts passing game quite a bit.
Yeah, I do too, and that's just going to be a decision time because, right, like I said, when you start paying for guys like Hopkins and Zeke, oh, I'm going to move it to the next game, you do those upper middle tier guys get a lot harder to pay for. All right, Seattle goes in and plays Dallas. Dallas is a two-point favorite at home, coming off a week where I'm just going crazy. They had nothing to play for, and they just played all their guys except for Zeke, who was sort of, the note on him was they were sort of nursing some nagging injuries on him, but everyone else played a full run of snaps in a completely and utterly meaningless game. Maybe you want to take momentum into the playoffs. There's really no other explanation explanation for why these guys like Dak and Cooper and everyone else played a ton of, just played every single snap. Zeke is another guy that you just have to play in cash. There's no other way around it. I know he's 8,800, and I know there are guys like Marlon Mack and Lamar Miller and Melvin Gordon on Saturday, and Zeke is just in such another level over these guys that it's really not even close. Like, I mean, is there any, can you find any reason to fade him in cash? Like, he feels like he, I would prioritize him even over Hopkins in terms of just any percentage of people that go into this game that don't play Ezekiel Elliott are coming in, you know, if it's like 85% or just like paying the rake. Like, I mean, that's how I feel about Zeke on the slate.
I think it'll wind up working out that way in practice. I do think that there's a case to be made on small slates sometimes for these to not be the slates where you just get to pay up all over the place. You know, if they're a solid middling options, then sometimes you just say, hey, there's just, you know, because like on big slates, a lot of times we enable ourselves to play guys like Zeke by taking savings at a position where there's unusual value. You know, Sterling Shepard is filling in and Odell Beckham Jr. is injured or whatever. And we obviously just don't have a lot of that here on wildcard weekend. And that being said, the middle options are just pretty crappy. Like when you just start to go, because you just start to, you're taking on risk no matter what, I guess is my main point. Like, there's no option this weekend to be like, eh, I'll just grab a bunch of $7,000 wide receivers and call it a day. Because those guys this week look like Doug Baldwin, Tyler Lockett, Keenan Allen against the Ravens, right? Like, you're not getting away with anything by going a little bit cheaper there. And so I think for that reason, yeah, Zeke will wind up being the overwhelmingly highest owned player on the slate.
Yeah, if you look at his usage for the season, he's averaging 26.6 carries plus targets per game. The next closest is a full like 11% lower in Todd Gurley at 24, and then it really even drops off a bigger cliff. Like, you're looking into like the 20% lower range for number three. Like, Zeke is just, sure, we talk about this almost, you know, week in and week out when he's on the main slate, but he's just in his complete and own class in terms of running back this season, and been very involved in the passing game too. So script independent, I don't see any reason to not play him. Now, the other guys that we can maybe discuss here are a little bit more speculative. We have Dak, who at times has kind of gotten there on his price. I still would prefer Watson. And then we have Amari Cooper, who went through a string of just elite wide receiver one sort of targets, has basically dropped off from both a target perspective and from a conversion perspective. Guys like him, guys like Gallup, I mean, Gallup did get a little bit more involved over the last couple weeks. Beasley had a couple catches. Thoughts on these guys in terms of, you know, where you kind of rank them in cash compared to guys like Hopkins and Hilton?
Yeah, I rank them below them for the most part. I think when I'm looking at the Cowboys wide receivers, I think Amari Cooper you can make a case for. The concerning thing about Cooper is he was on that really consistent streak of being well-targeted and converting a lot of those targets into receptions. And then it's kind of gone back the other way with, you know, two very underwhelming games against Indy and Tampa Bay, both from a usage and production standpoint. He gets the usage against the New York Giants, gets 11 targets, but converted that, and it's just five catches for 31 yards. So I think you can play Cooper. I think he's obviously part of the plan when it's working. And I don't think the Cowboys feel married to it either. So if Seattle manages to shut it down early, you could see it wind up coming back to haunt you. But all that being said, you know, we're moving from the perspective of Cooper having been, you know, a guy who's in discussions on these price points on full main slates. Given that we're on a four-game slate, if Cooper winds up in your lineup, I think you absolutely just live with it. I guess we'll get to this game in a little bit, but in the same price range, Cooper and Allen Robinson are right there next to each other. Do you have a sense for where you would want to land between those two guys? Because, you know, Chicago going up against Philly is one of the weaker passing defenses on this slate. So, and our system right now is kind of leaning Robinson, but do you have a gut feeling on those two guys?
I probably would lean Robinson, and I wouldn't feel great about it. Like, that's Philly. The Philly secondary is very low rated in terms of like what you're getting from them on a coverage perspective. Like, they have, you know, at least from Pro Football Focus's standpoint, they're among the lowest overall like aggregate group that you can see. Like, there's just like there's no guy that you don't need to hide from any of these guys. So I think probably I'd go Robinson with the idea that Cooper definitely has more upside, right? Like, I think that Robinson probably has a somewhat safer floor. I don't really feel comfortable or have a conviction one way or the other about that. One other guy I want to mention before we get into these Sunday games, I guess we could talk about Seattle a little bit, but is Blake Jarwin. Blake Jarwin, over the last 3 weeks, the final 3 weeks of the season, when they basically moved him, because there was question like who was going to be the starting tight end for the Colts over the last quarter of the season because they were dealing with so many injuries. Blake Jarwin ended up being the fifth most targeted tight end in football over the last 3 weeks of the season. Kittle, Ertz, Kelsey, Ingram, and then Blake Jarwin at 18 targets. That is, I think, if you're looking for a chalk payoff at DraftKings at 3,300, this one's an easy one. I think that he is going to be the highest owned tight end just because of that target share at 3,300. You'll take your lumps knowing it's tight end and just maybe call it a day. So if you're looking for a saving somewhere, Jarwin definitely represents that. It's a little bit closer on FanDuel, where he's 5,800 and 800 more is Eric Ebron, and then 1,800 more is Zach Ertz. Now, the 800 and 1,600, oh, but I can't do this, I'm screwing this math up. The 800 and 1,800 between the difference between those guys makes a huge difference on small slates. So I think that Jarwin represents a nice way to save at tight end because the rest of this list is looking pretty bad. Hunter Henry is supposed to come back for the Chargers. He's been out the entire season with the ACL tear, so I'm not really sure where that lands him. So anyway, long-winded answer to say Blake Jarwin, definitely on DraftKings at 3,300, easily go there. What about Seattle? They've run the ball a ton this season, but when they are playing from behind, guys like Baldwin have been decently targeted. They just haven't never had to do it. What do we do with teams like Seattle that have been in so many sort of downhill running games that they've had games where, like, Wilson's thrown less than 20 passes, like just insane numbers. They've run the ball 35 times or something like that. How do we project a team like that where over the course of the season, they did something maybe that's going to look very different than what they're going to do against Dallas today?
I'm sorry, I'm laughing because there's kids outside for a snow day and they're just absolutely wreaking havoc on the neighborhood. So the case with guys like Baldwin, I think Baldwin is going to be, for me, a big tournament play, and I think he's a very good one. You know, we've talked about what really makes upside in the NFL, and one of the main things is when you can just get a disproportionate number of your team's touchdowns when things happen to be going in your favor, and certainly Baldwin checks that box for me. But even on a small slate, I get that they have had middling things to play for, but so last game they didn't have much to play for against Arizona, that's true, but prior to that, in real games against San Francisco, for instance, 4 targets, 6 targets, you know, he's getting down to 5, 4, 3 targets earlier this season. Is this really a guy we can pay 7,000 plus for? Especially because that's going to mean making concessions somewhere else. I just don't see it. I mean, again, big tournaments, sure, sign me up. But the guy averaged 9 fantasy points a game on the season. Like, that's awful. That's like wide receiver 3 type territory.
Well, this is what I'm saying about... a lot of those games, I get what you're saying. A lot of these games are games where his target share is there. It's just that they just don't throw the ball at all. Like,
but that isn't that a problem though? Like, sometimes there are teams who just don't want to throw the ball. Like, why would Seattle totally change their approach come playoff time?
Yeah, I don't know. They might not. I mean, like, a lot of these games, they jumped out the big leads, like the San Francisco game. So a couple of these games, like Arizona, they're out to a lead, they threw 21 times. San Francisco, they were out to a big lead, they threw 17. Minnesota, they were out to a lead, they threw 20 times. But the games where they did have to throw, like KC and San Francisco, because the teams were keeping it close, Carolina was 1-2, 12 targets, 6 targets, 7 targets, 10 targets. Like, so I guess
mostly also 5 targets against the Rams when they lost by 5, 4 targets against the Chargers when they lost in a close game. You know,
the Chargers one is the worst one. That's the worst one, running into that Chargers secondary. I don't know. I'm not going to go.
But again, like, I get that there's reasons. There's always going to be reasons why. But like, why? Like, when we look at other guys that we're going to talk about playing for this weekend, Allen Robinson has been up against tough defenses too sometimes, right? And he just has been getting 8 targets a game regardless. And his quarterback is also not that great and also doesn't throw that much, you know? Like, I just don't. I'm not trying to say Doug Baldwin's a bad player. I don't want his agent to call me up and tell me I'm besmirching his good name.
Oh, like, man, if his agent called, it'd be Seattle awesome. That means we arrived. I would love it. Keep talking. I want the agent to call. That means we're, like, on someone's radar. That'd be awesome.
Exactly.
Okay.
But the case for Baldwin is that for some reason Seattle decides to throw more today. I don't see any reason why they would. It's not to say they can't. If they do, all those guys become very interesting plays. But why? Like, it just seems like not a very DFSR approach to assume that they would just jump back into more passing all of a sudden.
Yep, I'm totally with you. Okay, let's get into this Sunday games where the fantasy implications are fewer and far between. It seems like, especially
unless
if
you're playing a Sunday only slate,
I mean, look, there's always value on different slates, and you have to kind of sniff it out. And this is going to be one of the ones where maybe all the plays look a little bit ugly. But we have the Chargers going into Baltimore. Chargers going to have a full bill of health for guys like Gordon, guys like Keenan Allen. And like I said before, they're getting Hunter Henry back. I mean, where that lands him in terms of snaps, the guy hasn't played all season. So I don't know. I don't want to be in the habit of going overboard on a guy like Hunter Henry, who did come into the season as, you know, a pretty highly rated tight end. But the guy hasn't played at all. Let's start with Baltimore. We mentioned Lamar Jackson. It seems like the floor is there because of the running. The Chargers are a good defense, but they've shown the ability to, you know, he went through that run where he was just playing just the most cupcake defense of all time, but then did get a tougher matchup last week and was still able to perform. Do you think did you see enough from him to know or to think that he could get there from a fantasy perspective? And we kind of nodded to before, but where do you rank him as compared to Luck and Watson specifically?
Yeah, it's close for me. I think the thing with Jackson, basically the idea is that we've seen what Baltimore will do with him when they need to, which is that they are happy to give him 18, 20 carries a game, like just to make that the first plan and make the other team beat their best option, right? And I think the Cleveland game is actually a pretty reasonable proxy here. They needed to win that game, and when they felt like they needed to win it, and it was close, they just kept giving him the ball and just letting him run. So I think for that reason, Jackson has among the highest floors on this slate. I think it's between him and Watson in terms of being a high floor option. Since he's become the starter, the fewest fantasy points he's had in a game have been 16, although he's been in that kind of 16 to 22-ish range for most games too. So I like Jackson. The Chargers are a very tough matchup, obviously. I think a lot of people will, you know, a lot of systems, especially that account for defenses versus a passer, will not account for Jackson's role here properly because, of course, he's a running back, basically, not a passer first. So I think it's not as bad a matchup as it seems on paper. The Chargers are still just a good defense. All the defenses are pretty good. So, again, for the big all-day slate, I think I would prefer – or all-weekend slate, rather. I think I'd prefer Watson. I think if I was just looking at the Sunday slate, though, and I'm deciding between Jackson and Trubisky, I think I would go with Jackson there.
And, look, you can't avoid good defenses here, right? Like, on this slate, we have the 1, 3,
the
7,
are the
8
defense.
And 9, we have 5 of the top 9 defenses in the league are playing on a 4-game slate. So, like, it's going to be pretty damn tough to avoid good defense. Even Philly's 15, and then I get to get a little further down to find where Seattle. Oh, sorry, Seattle's 14. So, like, you're getting all top half defenses, and you just got to choose, at this point, probably opportunity.
So, Philly is the worst defense in the playoffs, right? And then that's what we'll get to when we get to that game, where we'll be considering guys that normally we wouldn't consider on big normal slates, especially when we get down to that compressed Sunday slate and things are just going to look ugly regardless, then we're going to be kissing a few frogs, and those were going to be wearing Chicago uniforms this week.
For the prices, I'm not really all that interested in going almost anywhere on the Charger side of things. I think they're just all...
Well, so here's the thing. It's very difficult to not go anywhere on the Charger side. I'm not very interested in it either, but I just want to know how you're going to make a lineup without playing anybody from some of these teams. Like, you know, our system originally was even pulling out Melvin Gordon just because it was seeing just a total lack of real plays, like real running backs who do stuff. So this might be helpful for a Sunday slate breakdown here, but if you just look at the running games of these individual teams, I don't think you can touch Edwards or Dixon in probably a straight up timeshare against a real team. Like, they could easily just each get 9 carries or something. They're both reasonably expensive. You just can't do it. You head over to Philly, strict timeshare between Adams and Smallwood. Like, basically,
and throw Sproles in there too. Like, Sproles gets snaps also. So
exactly. He can get snaps, especially on third down, third and long in particular. So you really don't want to do it. Maybe you can squint and do it on DraftKings where Adams is in the low 3,000s, but you're still not feeling amazing. On Chicago, we'll go deeper on it. I think you do have a credible running back in Jordan Howard. But again, you need two of these guys. So who is your second? You know, and I think Gordon, you know, he'll wind up being sort of the de facto option. I mean, we did have a game where these guys played each other recently. Gordon was dreadful. 15 total touches for 54 yards. Did get the touchdown. Baltimore just utterly shut them down here. Wouldn't be excited about it, but you just might have to. So that's kind of where I landed on the Chargers.
Those kids are enjoying that snow day, baby, and I'm liking it. So
you
the,
can hear it all. Jesus Christ. I tried to mute between it because they're also like enjoying it, but I just saw one kid just get tackled into the snow too. So
no, they're having fun. It's no big deal. I think the theme here for this the Sunday slate is that you are just for you know, considering there's a flex option, we don't usually go this way. You're definitely not playing three running backs, I don't think. I think that most times for cash games we've wanted to prioritize having three running backs on bigger slates because those guys, they're just a group of those guys that are just so much better than everybody else in terms of usage. This is not the slate to do that. What I'm talking about, the specific two-game slate. So I think you're taking a Josh Adams hit at like 3,500 on DraftKings and saying, let's hope, you know, or maybe you want to take Smallwood or maybe you want to take Sproles or something like that. 5,700 for Adams on FanDuel. Maybe you hope that they get up early. It's nothing you're going to feel good about. I think you're just looking to basically say, can I reasonably expect double-digit carries out of one of these guys that's cheap? And that's really where you're going to end up landing. Because, like, the other thing is hard to know. Is the plan to run Melvin Gordon, like, 30 times? I mean, this is the playoffs. Stranger things have happened that maybe they clearly wanted to do that earlier in the season.
That was the big thing I touched on, too, that the Chargers were playing for with mixed motivations throughout the rest of the season. I mean, I think they obviously would have liked to have gotten the home field advantage throughout, but there were a lot of weird game scripts, and Gordon had some health concerns and stuff in there. In the middle of the season, Gordon was touching the ball 25 times a game.
Yep.
So I think you could see them look at a rather unsuccessful game against Baltimore and be like, why do we give him the ball only 15 times? Like, this has been the thing that worked for us all year, right? So, yeah, I think the thing that could turn is Gordon goes out there and gets 25 carries, and he's the best play on the slate, even in a tough matchup. So that's
If there's a guy we're low on, if there's a guy we're low on opportunity, we have him for 14 carries and three targets, that would be the one guy we could look back on and say, wow, that was a mistake. That would be the one place I would say, like, you know, unlike the Gus Edwards, kind of Thixon thing, or like definitely not the Philly thing, I'm not going overboard on any of these guys. If there was a guy to go overboard on this slate, I think he and Keenan Allen would be the two guys that I'd be willing to... Oh, I can see you're doing it in our system right now. Okay, let's go. Let's finish it off with the Eagles and the Bears. Bears, 6.5-point favorites, usually where you want to land. 6.5-point home favorites for the running backs. And then we have Jordan Howard and Tarik Cohen. And Howard is like, the guy just carries the ball. It doesn't never catches the ball at all. You need to kind of, you're praying for a touchdown. Is this the time that you just kind of end up praying for a touchdown on Jordan Howard? He will touch the ball a decent amount, but like, he's just not all that efficient. And from a PPR perspective, he's basically worthless.
Yeah, I think you're definitely playing him on DraftKings. DraftKings, he's just 5,800. And even though, and I think that price is very low because of the PPR thing. But, I mean, in a game against Minnesota last week that they wanted to win, 23 touches. Yep. And just, again, compare him to some of the other guys in this group. Over the last few weeks, he is the running back on this slate that's gotten the most touches. And he's not the most expensive guy. So when you're comparing him to the Eagles mess, Gordon, even, and the Ravens mess too, like, you just got to play somebody. So I think you could see some Jordan Howard on both slates, frankly. I mean, I think the floor should be pretty reasonable there. Vegas, the game script as projected right now, has it being in a situation where Chicago will be up, but probably trying to play safe. So Howard getting 15 to 20 carries seems pretty solid bet to me.
Yep, I land there as well. And we touched on the pass catchers here with Allen Robinson. Taylor Gabriel has something of a floor, as long as he's never going to get any yards. The guy just, you know, turns a catch into 5 yards each and every time. He's done that with multiple teams now. It's just now teams don't want to use him in any other way. But I think
he has been reliable. I think the case for Gabriel, I wrote him up as, like, again, in that if you just are going to pay $5,000 for a receiver on FanDuel.
Right.
I can't remember who I was juxtaposing him against, Tyrell Williams or something. A lot of great names, huge names on this thing. Mm-hmm. The case is that the passes to him have been such effective plays. Like, I think he's caught 10 straight balls or something thrown his way. That's stretched over 3 games, so it's not very many targets. But that could be a situation where if it is more difficult to Robinson for whatever reason, it's got to be sticking in their mind that it's worked when they've gone to it. So I think you can go there. Again, doesn't look very exciting on paper, but even in big tournaments, he's the type of guy who could all of a sudden get 8 for 8 targets, and then you're really happy with it on DraftKings.
All right, final guy I want to talk about here is Zach Ertz, because this is a guy that the system does kind of want to play here, and I sort of get it. He's head and shoulders above the rest of the group. Like, when I talked about the DeAndre Hopkins thing, about like how much farther above the rest of the group Ertz is, that's clearly the case with him as a tight end on this slate. I mean, really almost any slate, just the amount of targets that he gets over the course of the season. And it's the Bears defense, and you're paying top dollar for him. And I'm wondering if You know, if it came down to a choice between paying top dollar for Ertz or top dollar for Melvin Gordon, because like that strikes me as possibly the decision to make, right? Is when there's not a lot of other cheap payoffs other places, or you know, possibly Ertz as opposed to Keenan Allen. Where would you rank Ertz in that? I'm going to say not among the tight ends. He's clearly the best tight end, but I'm talking about now price tiers. This tier of skill player that is maybe in like around that 8,000 range, and that group is Gordon, Keenan. I'm talking just on the Sunday slate. Gordon, Allen, Ertz, and then it goes down to like Jordan Howard and then Alshon Jeffrey. Where would you rank Ertz in comparison to, I guess, just the Chargers guys? Because I think that is going to be a decision to make on the small slate.
Yeah, I think for me, I would just go something like, well, especially for their position, just because it's not one-to-one. Ertz so much safer than all the other tight ends. I think prioritizing him makes perfect sense. I think after that, Gordon, and then maybe Howard, and then Allen, it would be somewhere where I would go. The tricky part at wide receiver on this slate too is, again, you need three of them, and just good luck finding three receivers on this slate that actually catch balls on any level of a routine basis. And I think, yeah, for that reason, it's going to be an interesting decision. Like, it's not going to be as simple as just putting the inputs in the optimizer and hoping for the best. I think we're going to really need to sit and try to figure out, like, is there any way to even establish a floor today? And if there's not, like, what level of risk do we need to take on in order to not just hate our lives all day? But realistically, this just might be a better day to watch football and hang out with your family.
No way, so baby. FanDuel and DraftKings, DFSR.com/deals is going to get you optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings for the whole wild card weekend. So go check that out. It's optimal lineups also for NBA and NHL, all covered under one subscription package, and you're all good to go. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com or DFSR.com/deals will get you that deal. All right, we're going to take off. Good luck on a wild card week, and we'll be back again for the game-by-game breakdown of the divisional round next week, and as we enter into a little bit more of more fantasy-viable games as the Saints and Chiefs and Patriots and Rams and all these teams come back. But otherwise, buddy, enjoy your wild card weekend.
Thanks, man. You too.